From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jennifer Canfield. Coming up this week, Fish and Game reduces limits for two popular sports fishing rivers in Kodiak. A Southeast Village corporation is seeking a federal takeover of the Chatham Strait fisheries. And a local tribe protests a dramatic increase of the Sitka Sacro herring guideline harvest level. All that and more Golden King crab to go around. Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has reduced the limits for king salmon on the Karluk and Iakulik rivers. Sports fishermen will be allowed one king salmon longer than 20 inches on the Iakulik River before July 25th. As for the Karluk River, it's catch and release only and no bait allowed. Fish and Game biologist Don Tracy says it's the second year in a row that the department has decided to make the preseason call.
Mostly the reason why we get these announcements out early is to give anglers a heads up, and that hopefully allows them a chance to, if they so desire, to adjust their plans or at least adjust their expectations of what kind of experience they're going to have during the fishery.
The Karluk has been in decline since 2001 and the Iakulik since 2006. Tracy says that while they aren't sure what is causing the decline, some biologists suspect it might be part of a natural process.
It could be a cycle, a natural cycle of fluctuating abundance. Chinook salmon stocks all across the North Pacific have declined in recent years in varying degrees. Some have been as dramatic and precipitous as the Karluk River has, if you look back at the 10-year history of that run. Others have had declines followed by abundance levels near what long-term averages or near what would be considered normal.
Tracy says the department will monitor escapement and, if necessary, make adjustments to the limit during the season.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
A regional group advising the Federal Subsistence Board says it should wait before acting on a petition to change fishery management near Angoon. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports from Juneau.
The Southeast Alaska Subsistence Regional Advisory Council says it's too early to turn state management of sockeye fisheries over to the federal government. Bertram Adams, Sr. of Yakutat, chairs the council.
We found that it'd be very difficult to extend extraterritorial jurisdiction, in areas that Angoon is concerned about, because it was not only going to affect, those areas that Angoon is concerned about, but other areas as well, such as Cake or Huna.
Instead, the council recommended waiting 3 years to see if government officials, fishermen's groups, and Angoon leaders can find alternative solutions. The proposal came from Kootsnuwu, Angoon's village native corporation. It asked the statewide subsistence board to back a federal takeover of northern Chatham Strait fisheries. The corporation and village leaders said that would increase subsistence sockeye salmon harvests. That's because the federal government gives customary and traditional fishing a higher priority. But Adams says the proposal might not allow that to happen.
We also found the secretaries of Interior and Agriculture does not have the authority to manage the resources. All they can do is shut things down.
The regional advisory group's opinion strongly influences the statewide subsistence board. That panel will send its recommendations to the federal Interior and Agriculture departments, but it will not be made public. Kootsnuwu officials were disappointed with the advisory group's decision. Board Chairman Floyd Kukesh, also an advisory council member, said its recommendation is incomplete.
One of the things we really have been struggling with is having the state and the federal governments working together, and that's what we're looking forward to seeing happen. And we're doing this not just to create friction, but to work on making it better for the subsistence user and for Angoon.
The Advisory Council did recommend re-examining management plans for the area's seine fishery and the nearby Hidden Falls hatchery, and it called for studies and regulatory changes to increase Angoon sockeye catch. Representatives of government agencies and fishing groups suggested a variety of solutions at the meeting. Kukesh worries whether they will follow through.
It sounded very sincere. We seem to have had some good people out there, but the one thing that we wanted the most was to get it in writing. We seem to be a little lacking because once this meeting's over, people are going to kind of go away, and we're hoping we can maintain the momentum where we can keep them there.
Tlingit-Haida Central Council and other tribal governments testified in favor of Kutznuu's extraterritorial jurisdiction petition. Sea Alaska General Counsel Jaylene Arujo, who is from Angoon, said the regional native corporation backs the plan. She said the federal government has a better policy on subsistence, but doesn't always use it.
The problem that we've had and continue to have is while it's a federally recognized right, it's not always a federally protected right. We have the federal agencies, and I speak with all due respect, that are too quick to delegate or give up jurisdiction to the state. Federal agencies often simply adopt the state bag limits and harvest limits without making their own determinations and considerations.
Others talked about how subsistence sockeyes fit into Southeast Native culture. Alfred McKinley Sr., who's fished since 1944, said those catching the sockeyes share with those who can't.
In Tlingit, they say, Ka'ich-to-shi, Ka'ich-to-shi. You help each other. That's how our people are.
Commercial fishermen, hatchery, and industry groups testified against the petition, calling it overkill. Petersburg's Jeremy Jensen seines in Chatham Strait.
I think before we get to the point where we're eliminating whole areas for fishing, we need more research, more data, and a better understanding of what's happening.
Others said part of the problem is a key spawning route with a difficult waterfall. They suggested blasting or building a fish ladder below Kanalku Lake, where Angoon residents harvest sockeyes. Bob Thorstenson is with the Southeast Alaska Seiners Association.
Can't we fix the frigging falls first? Let's get the fish in the lake and worry about who owns it next.
If recent history holds, federal officials will make their decision on the petition within 4 to 6 weeks. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Juneau.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the whole show online anytime at kmxt.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
In this year's Sitka Sound Sacro Herring Fishery, the commercial fleet will be able to harvest nearly 10,000 more tons than last year. The increased guideline harvest level could be good news for the 48 permit holders in one of Alaska's most lucrative fisheries. But it also raises concerns with Sitka's local tribal government, which has mounted a publicity campaign to protest the high harvest limit. In Sitka, Ed Ronco has more.
Last year, the commercial fleet pulled about 19,400 tons of herring from Sitka Sound. This year, that number is around 29,000 tons. The big jump comes after the state corrected the way it ages the herring. An error in determining age meant that scientists were underestimating the biomass and therefore setting a lower harvest level. Fish and Game says, in essence, the increase in the harvest level is setting the bar back where it should have been all along. But the Sitka Tribe of Alaska disagrees, and it has taken to newspapers throughout Southeast Alaska to say so. A series of ads placed in the Sitka Sentinel, the Ketchikan Daily News, and the Juneau Empire state that 29,000 tons is roughly equal to 58 million pounds, and one of the ads claims that that is enough herring to cover a football field in 20 feet of the silverfish. The ads call the harvest excessive.
Our concern is we wanted people to visualize what was being removed from the waters around Sitka, and then to begin to question if those overall biomass numbers are correct.
Jeff Feldpausch is Resource Protection Director for the Sitka Tribe.
I myself didn't know what 58 million pounds of herring looked like, so we ended up doing some sample weights. We got bought a box of bait herring from one of the cold storages, took the weight, the dimensions, figured out the density of herring, and then converted that back out through the 58 million pounds, and gave people a good idea of what 58 million pounds of herring looks like.
Fish and Game points out that the harvest is only ever 20% of the entire biomass. So if we use that same math about the football field, the fish taken might be 20 feet high, but the fish left behind would be another 80 feet high. The tribe has doubts about the state's methodology. Feldpausch says the state's data is based on three-year-old herring.
So that means there's 2-3 years of data that they don't know what's happening out there. And a precipitous decline in those particular years, brood years, won't be caught in the model until they hit age three. So you could be significantly over-harvesting these fish and not know it for several years.
Well, I think the Department of Fish and Game has the best management and science anywhere in Alaska or anywhere in the Pacific Northwest.
Steve Reifenstuhl is executive director of the Southeast Herring Conservation Alliance, which represents the commercial fleet.
When the Department of Fish and Game took over management in the 60s, when we became a state, the biomass for the Sitka Sound herring was around 5,000 tons or a little less. Today, it's in excess of 145,000 tons, over a 20-fold increase. I think that speaks for the health of the resource. It speaks to the good management and the good science that the department delivers.
Reifenstuhl says the fishery benefits everyone in Sitka. It helps keep the city's raw fish tax revenue up. And the hundreds of people who come to town every year to fish or to support the fishery serve as something of a jumpstart for local merchants. The tribe and the commercial fleet have found some common ground. A deal struck at the State Board of Fisheries meeting last month set up a subsistence-only zone in Sitka Sound. Roughly, the zone is between the southern portion of Middle Island and all the way down to the breakwater at the north end of Sitka Channel. Reifenstuhl says it was a good compromise.
It demonstrates that both sides were willing to come to the middle, even if they disagreed about the parameters. And I think that really this time, at this time, is time for healing. The compromise was made. That's good for Sitka, and it's good for the resource in the sense that the herring fishery can go on. Subsistence needs can be met. They have been met in the past. And that's good for Sitka's economy.
The final zone is smaller than the tribe's original request, but Feldpausch says it's still considered a victory. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
The world's supply of king crab legs is about to increase. Last week, the Alaska Board of Fisheries voted to up the Aleutian Islands golden king crab allocation by 5%. Unlike the other crab fisheries in the Bering Sea, the amount of golden king crab that can be harvested is set in regulation. Recently, fishermen have been catching more golden kings in each pot, which they say is a sign that the population is thriving. The harvesters suggested adding 20% to the existing allocation, but the board voted for a much smaller 5% increase. That equals roughly 300,000 additional pounds per year. In dollars, that translates to nearly 1.5 million annually if dock prices stay at this year's record high of $5 per pound.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Ed Ronco in Sitka, and Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska. In Kodiak, I'm Jennifer Canfield.